Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political opinions. And today is Tuesday, August 29th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
Hi.
Happy National Lemon Juice Day.
Oh, that's a little sour.
Indeed. And so that's all I'm going to have to say about that.
Really? That's it?
That's true. That's all.
Okay. Well, then I guess let's get going because we had a great day in gold. I mean, it's not up $100, but it's up almost $18. So we're going to take it. $1,938. Silver was up 53 cents at 24.83. Platinum was up 12 at 990, and palladium was down to 1,280. The USDX was weaker today by 0.61 at 103.41. Crude oil was up $1.13 at 81.23. And the paper markets today, they all had a good day too. Let me see. Here they are. The Dow. The NASDAQ popped more than 1%. The NASDAQ didn't quite do that. 292 points for the Dow. S&P was up over 1%, up 64 points. And the NASDAQ was up almost 1.75%, up $238. The Asian markets, as they were last night, were all positive. European markets, as they were yesterday, were all positive. Oh, the world is just all in flush, good glory, economic times. Hallelujah. 10-year yield, 4.118. That was down just a little bit. And if we take a peek at natural gas, that was down 2.40%. A 2.517. I think a lot of this, there's a lot of hoopla over the first Bitcoin ETF as soon as the court rules in favor of Grayscale over the SEC. So Bitcoin rallied more than 7% today. Go buy nothing. Yeah, that's the ticket. Just go buy nothing. It just cracks me up.
I'd rather invest in abstract art.
I'd rather buy Hunter Biden's art, and that's about the same as Bitcoin. you know, Ruby makes better art than anyway. Let's go ahead and let's get started right away. You want to get started right away, Dave?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. We got home prices. They appear to be moderating. Although 1 week we hear that it's rising, the next week it's moderating, a month over a month, prices rose in June while annual prices were unchanged. That's the annual prices, adding to a growing body of evidence that the housing costs could have begun to recover. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index increased month over month, and on a year-over-year basis, the National Price Index was unchanged in June versus a 0.4% fall back in May. The 20-city index was down by 1.2% in June, and that after it slid 1.7% annually back in May. So maybe we are, these are possible signs that seem to point towards a bottoming in prices. Could be materializing, maybe. And so anyway, Greg Lazara, he's the managing director at S&P Dow Jones, underscored the trend, noting that the national composite has risen 4% year to date, faster than the historical median full year increase.
Yeah, he also said, we recognize that the market's gain could be truncated by increases in mortgage rates or by general economic weakness, but the breadth and strength of this month's reports are consistent with an optimistic view of future results. Now, demands remained relatively resilient against the highest mortgage rates in over 20 years, and this acute shortage, existing homes in particular, has propped up prices in recent months. Median price well over $400,000 now. And that could be unwelcome news for the Fed. In a speech at Jackson Hole on Friday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell, I'm going to start calling him Jay like his pals do, cited a possibly rebounding housing sector among a number of robust economic indicators that just might force the Fed to continue hiking rates. We will see. We'll be talking more about that throughout the program.
Buddy. Jay, buddy. Hey, buddy. He's not my buddy.
Jay, pal. Anyway,
Jay, pal. Jay, buddy. Hey, businesses posted far fewer open jobs in July. Plus, the number of Americans quitting their jobs fell sharply for the second straight month. Two clear signs that the labor market is cooling in a way that could further reduce inflation. That ain't going to happen. But hey, that's what they say. The number of job vacancies dropped to 8.8 million last month, the Labor Department said today. And that's kind of the fewest since March of 2021. Yet the drop seemed to be even steeper because June's figure was initially reported as 9.6, Dave. So I guess they still say it's healthy historically. And again, maybe I'll just start using that word hysterically a lot today. That might be the theme of today's program on some of these reports. I feel ornery today, Dave.
Uh-oh. Well, just wait to the second segment.
Uh-oh. Maybe we should have started there first.
Well, we'll just keep that orneriness going.
Fewer Americans also voluntarily quit a job in July, with 3.5 million people leaving their jobs. That's down from June. The lowest since February of 2021. So most Americans quit work for other better paying jobs. And during and after the pandemic, there was a big spike in quitting as workers sought higher pay and benefits everywhere. So even though you might see the job numbers go down, but if most Americans quit work for better paying jobs, that means it kind of offsets. That means inflation is still going to be there, if that's what they're saying inflation is there for. So it's really not cooling the market at all.
Still, right? They're saying the Fed's going to like this data, this latest data, because they say fewer job openings and less quitting reduce pressure on employers to raise pay.
Oh, that's just why there's been how many strikes in the, you know, wait until those wages
Well,
yeah, to the tune of billions of dollars. How many strikes have been avoided and on some in unbelievable increases in wages? So
well, let's see what happens with the UAW, too. I mean, their pay raise is great for employees. They can also lead companies to increase prices to offset those higher labor costs.
Absolutely, they will. Absolutely, they will.
Leads to higher inflation. excuse me. Again, Powell and other Fed officials have been pinning hopes that a steady drop in the number of job openings would help bring inflation down without requiring the layoffs that they and many economists have warned would be necessary to rein in prices. But again, in Jackson Hole on Friday, he told attendees, so far, job openings have declined substantially without increasing unemployment, calling that a highly welcome but historically unusual result.
Hysterically.
That appears to reflect large excess demand for labor, saying that that calls for agile policymaking, which in my mind raises the uh-oh bar, because I'm not so sure what kind of agility this group has. In any event, we'll know more on Friday when the government issues the jobs report for August, which economists are forecasting that employers will have added 170,000 jobs this month. I'll have more interest rates in the Fed in today's third segment, Melody.
Okay, let's go on to, well, one thing about consumers are feeling a little less confident as summer is coming to a close with higher prices and interest rates weighing on their willingness to spend and or willingness or their ability. They already tapped out their credit cards and so forth, so I'm not quite sure which is the real story there, the willingness or their inability. The Conference Board, the business research group, said its consumer confidence index tumbled to 106.1 in August from a revised 114 in July. That's a pretty big drop. That's just not slightly less. It's considerably less. August swoon, which was somewhat mirrored the stock market decline this month, erased gains from June and July. The index measures both Americans' assessment of current economic conditions and their outlook for the next 6 months. And both measures saw significant declines in August. Consumers' view of current conditions fell to 144 from 153. And the index for future expectations slid to 80 from 88 in July. Any readings below 80 for future expectations historically, signal a recession within a year. That's what, 5-6 times already?
Yep, there's more to come.
Oh boy, there's a lot of history. Okay, consumer spending accounts for around 70%. And don't forget that, ladies and gentlemen, we're a consumer spending economy. And so pay close attention to their moods. So,
well, they're saying that this downturn reflects consumer anxiety over spending on non-essential goods, particularly if they have to put on a credit card with an interest rate upwards of 25 to 30%. They don't pay it all off at the end of the month. And the cost of everyday essential items continue to frustrate consumers. Dana Peterson, who's the chief economist at the Conference Board, said the retreat in consumer confidence is evident across all age groups. The downturn in spending, as we've talked about, has shown up in the earnings reports of many high-profile retailers. Target, for one, reported its first quarterly sales decline in 6 years earlier this month. Home Depot, the nation's largest home improvement retailer, said its sales continued to decline. And today, Best Buy reported that its sales and profits slid last quarter as they continue to wrestle with a pullback in gadget spending. Well, you know, the data continues to suggest that Americans could be tightening their budgets just as the new school year begins and the all-important holiday season just a couple of, is that months or weeks away?
Yeah.
We're seeing, I know, middle of, in fact, it was, where are we, end of August? It was first, the beginning of the second week of August, we were in Lowe's, and they had this massive Halloween display.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Christmas is just around the corner.
Well, it's surprising to see this much Halloween stuff out this early. I mean, it's almost passing Christmas as far as I wonder the numbers anymore. I mean, it's becoming a really big holiday.
And, maybe these retailers are trying to entice consumers to buy before they run out of their pandemic savings.
Maybe, because that's coming up.
Yeah,
that's quickly. Coming up. There's a lot of credits that are going to be dropping off and so forth come September 1st, I believe it is, for child care and so forth. So, and yet the student does need to start paying back their loans and everything like that. So,
going to be a tight fall.
It's going to be. And again, you know, people, they keep talking about how great our inflation is. Well, you know, it's only their numbers. It's almost kind of like Bitcoin. It's just numbers. There isn't anything real. There's no reality to it. And we live in this world where, you know, everything we base so many of our decisions on, what is it? It's based on, you know, people producing numbers that really aren't related to what's happening across this nation in so many areas of this nation and impacts so many people. There's just such a big disconnect. And so to say inflation is getting better when people are out there, yeah, okay, meat went up 50% and now it's down, still down, and it's down 20%. Well, it means it's still up 30%. It's still, you know, and that's an exaggerated percentage number, but it's just to show an example of things are still costly. You know, you have families that are going to the store, I don't even know how families do it. Spending $300-$400 at the grocery store a week or every other week, $1,000. I mean, good grief.
But yeah, well, one thing to remember, and I'm not sure I need to remind our listeners about this because they know best, that once inflation has risen so high, even a lower increase, as you referred to, is coming off of a higher base.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, prices are going up. It just may be that the rate of increase isn't as high as it's been.
Exactly. And you know, this should make us all feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Bank regulators unveil updated plans to protect you.
Yes.
The public.
Yes.
Warm and fuzzy. I got goosebumps. Regulators unveiled plans today to force regional banks to issue debt. Okay. To issue debt and bolster their so-called living wills, and which are steps meant to protect you, the public, in the event of more failures. Gee, are they expecting more failures? Possibly. American banks with at least $100 billion in assets would be subject to the new requirements, which makes them hold a layer of long-term debt to absorb losses in the event of a government seizure. Now, this is all from a joint notice from the Treasury Department, Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the Fed, and the FDIC. The steps are part of regulators' response to the regional banking crisis that we saw back in March and ultimately claiming three institutions. In July, the federal agencies released the first salvo of expected changes, a sweeping set of proposals meant to heighten capital requirements and standardize risk models for the industry, Dave.
Yeah, and this latest proposal impacted lenders are going to have to maintain long-term debt levels, treasuries, equal to 3.5% of average total assets or 6% of risk-weighted assets, whichever is higher. That's according to a fact sheet released today by the FDIC. That could add to the industry's earnings pressure after all three major rating agencies have downgraded the credit ratings of, more than a dozen lenders this year. Still, the industry will have three more years to conform to the new rule once enacted. That's just too long. Even a year is too long, but geez, could have been that.
Hey,
we hear that music, Melody.
We
what
do.
Does that mean?
It means we're heading into a break, and we'll be right back. Please stay with us. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And the phone number to Discount Gold and Silver is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, today, I don't surf the web. Okay. I have my sites I go to, and that's pretty much it, because, you've been doing this for as long as I have. You don't need to, you go where your news reports are and so forth and whatnot. And somebody called me yesterday, and it was after we were closed, and they had said something about, I know all about stacking or stackers. Stackers. So I started doing some research, and I guess they have a new term for people who invest in gold and silver. They're silver stackers. Did you ever hear that term, Dave?
I admittedly have not.
So, and it's like, oh, Lord, they'll just come up with anything to tag.
Who came up with that?
I don't know who came up with it, but I guess it, well, a couple of, well, the online sellers. The online sellers, because they're that type of, they're just trying to brand something, I guess. And I don't know how long it's been around. Maybe, I don't know. But gold and silver stackers. The only thing you're supposed to buy are round, round bullion. That's all. That's all you're allowed to buy. Stay away from it. Stay away from anything else. And that's just like, oh, heavens to mercy. And, you know, and then they end up pushing these gold dollars, this gold currency, I guess, a piece of paper then dipped in something. And it's just like, oh, yeah, well, go try and sell them in a time of difficulty or liquidate them at any time. Good luck. You know, they push the, these are the people who push kilos. It's like, what are people going to do with kilo bars? I mean, come on. You know, the junk that these people sell, and I'll tell you why. I'll do a comparison this week on some of this stuff, and then I'll tell you why they sell it and why people fall for it. And people think that they become seasoned buyers. They think they're becoming educated on how to buy gold and silver from these people on YouTube. That's the last place I would want to learn how to buy gold and silver is from a YouTube video, unless, of course, it was produced by me. You know, maybe that's just something we need to start doing, Dave. You know, maybe we need to start doing some short videos and offsetting some of these guys. They just irritate me, you know, because they just lead people in such a wrong direction. Mm-hmm. People end up owning just a bunch of crap. And yes, they have gold. Yes, they have silver, but they could have a much better concentrated portfolio, probably at a lesser cost also. So it's so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And they also prescribe to storing your coins with other gold dealers. And you know, there's a lot of good gold dealers out there. I'm not saying they're all bad. But I would trust the safety deposit box at a bank before I would trust storing my metals with a gold dealer. I don't care who it is. I mean, it's like when you store your metals with another gold dealer inside this country or outside this country, you have no idea what he has access to. And I just don't get it. I just don't get why people would do this. We have become a nation of people who don't want responsibility, I guess, to take care of their own investments, to take care of their own money. I mean, that's why financial planners are so successful, because people don't want to control their own money and have a... It's they don't want the responsibility. It's easier if something goes wrong, you can blame somebody else. It's easier than blaming yourself, I guess. I don't know, Dave. It's just, I mean, you can have financial planners, but play an active part in it. You make the decisions. Get the information. You make the decisions. So anyway, 1-800-375-4188. The stuff just irritates me, and it's sad. And I always said that before I ever retired, the one thing that I would do is I would truly open and say all the things that went on in 30 years that I have learned that you just don't hear about, and I try to share, but you get sued. So anyway, let's move on. I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday. Yesterday, Bloomberg's Joe Weisenthal wrote about how it's clear that the central bankers around the world are becoming anxious about the era of what he actually called big fiscal. He says it's evident from the multiple sessions and papers presented at last week's Jackson Hole Symposium that touched on how growing government debt levels have implications for financial stability and how it affects the monetary policy setting. This guy, economist Barry Eichengreen, delivered a paper for the event titled Living with High Public Debt. And he talked about how this global public debt issuance has exploded in 2020. Well, you know what, buddy? It actually exploded a lot sooner than that, but we'll use your 2020. And he talked about, for obvious reasons, which was the pandemic. But it was really actually the first time the money went directly into the economy. Lots of other things. We had the big bailouts and so forth. And he said with these governments, particularly the U.S., spending heavily on infrastructure and the energy transition, budget deficits remain elevated. And he also noted that in the U.S. and elsewhere, any sort of muscle for meaningful fiscal containment has withered. And setting aside whether big spending cuts or higher taxes is a good idea or not, big spending cuts, I think, is a good idea. Higher taxes is not, but that's my opinion. Such policy moves are extremely hard to imagine in almost any political arrangement here in the United States right now. I mean, it is so, everybody's going bonkers. And I mean, you've had presidents raising taxes in order to close the deficit, and then you have others lowering taxes in order to stimulate the economy, Dave.
Well, we can debate the spending cuts versus raising taxes to narrow the deficit on a future program. We talk about it all the time, as regular listeners know. But if you happen to think it was a good idea, then the follow-through to action is really, really difficult. Mike and Green pointed out that this isn't just a U.S. issue. The other interesting angle on this is that while people talk a lot about ratios like debt to GDP, what really brings on a debt crisis is more likely to be political, whether it's something like a debt ceiling-induced default or some other collapse in confidence in the U.S. political system, even dollar. That could be how we'll get an actual debt crisis. Yes, people are talking more, well, some would argue we are in crisis, and those who aren't should be. Yes, people are talking more about some new currency from elsewhere one day displacing the dollar. And they say things like about how China needs to run a current account deficit in order for that to happen. But it's the political hurdle that's harder. We're still a long way from people around the world wanting to hold a Chinese government token as a truly safe asset. Sure, that would ever happen. As Eisengreen sees it, high debt level will affect different countries differently. Much more stress on emerging markets as opposed to richer countries. But even those of us in that upper stratosphere face a reset someday. But history says that absent some sort of crisis, this level of debt issuance is likely to be a new normal that Fed officials and other central bankers are going to have to think about for some time to come.
Well, I think his key statement is they're the absent of some sort of crisis. Well, I don't think we will be absent from a crisis. And I think that's what will kind of put things all into perspective. And I mean, we'll see, but there's just too many things that are going on. And there isn't anything that's flowing smoothly or without some sort of a crisis. Or, I mean, it's just, it is like we're ready. We're just all balled up and it's, you know. It's stretching at the seams. And I mean, I think we see it everywhere. And, you know, we yet to see, you know, infrastructure. We yet to see, you know, and this transition into electric vehicles is really kind of a joke. I didn't even know. I mean, I was at the gas station the other day and you see all these Tesla charging stations, Dave. But then I heard that if you have a Ford, you can't charge your vehicle on a Tesla charging station. So it's like, okay, so all this money is going to Tesla so they can do it. But what about all these? So you're in darn shape if you're driving somewhere and gas station doesn't have your brand of charging station. And that's what I heard anyway. So, not sure if you have or not, Dave, but let's get back to this worker shortage. And this is what we hear all the time. Teachers, bus drivers, cops, plumbers, electricians, carpenters, surveyors, pilots, air traffic controllers. You know, some of the highest stake workplaces. You also have hospitals and prisons. Everybody seems to be short-staffed. But understaffing in these industries goes beyond inconvenience. I mean, you're looking with dire potential consequences for public health and safety. The causes are demographic, economic, and social. Americans are getting older, meaning fewer people of younger people of working age. And plus, there's just a lot of people who don't want to work. You know? After the tight labor market, unemployment in the U.S. is very low, and there simply aren't enough workers in the U.S. to meet demand. You know, and it goes on. And, you know, and the sad thing about that, Dave, is I heard that they're lowering the standards of workers so they can hire people. They've lowering the bar for qualified positions so they can hire people. And that's what puts people into, you know, that put danger into the public and so forth, making it unsafe. Some of these shortages, they say, is about wages. I mean, we've seen what's happened to the law enforcement. Why would anybody want to go into law enforcement in today's world? So I don't think you typically can't raise pay high enough to compete with some of these areas. Working conditions, employers are trying to fill in person. High-stress roles are competing with jobs that offer more flexibility, remote work, skills, as I mentioned. So there's not a lot of qualified workers out there, Dave, is there?
Mm. It's a new big bad world out there for employers, Melody, especially if you're not a multinational that has a big training staff. But just a quick aside as to the question of the charging stations and different kinds of cars. There are different levels of charging. For normal speed charging, the plug is generally the same for all cars. But for the real fast charging, different models have different brands. So, you know, you're going to go to a Wawa or 7-Eleven or whoever has them. They're generally the slower.
So you got to sit there for an hour.
Plugs, the standard plug, and yeah, whether you're there for 20 minutes or 30 minutes.
Well, I heard 45 minutes for those, you know.
Yeah, it could be. I haven't had that experience but once with a buddy who has a Tesla. I think we waited about 20 minutes for a partial charge just to get us home. but back to the qualified workers thing. You know, a couple of danger zones. The lack of qualified workers in AI and manufacturing threatens to slow productivity and growth in these areas where the U.S. is otherwise poised for big leaps. But in my own mind, that's not so bad, especially when it comes to AI. Manufacturing, well, that's different. More professionals are needed in deep learning, natural language processing, robotic process automation. Parents feeling the labor squeeze on multiple fronts in schools, teachers, bus drivers, social workers, and childcare. Parents often can't find it or afford it. Shortage of air traffic controllers contributing to an increase in near-miss collisions in the air and on the ground. Police departments, as you mentioned, have faced mass early retirements across the country, fueled by this plummeting morale. Prisons have the same issue. 21% of correctional officer positions were unstaffed in federal prisons last fall. Wow, that's huge. And that's increasing inmate violence, leading to more health problems for prisoners. So, again, it's a big bad world out there. And, unless there's...
How does having a shortage of correctional officers lead to health problems for prisoners? How does that work?
It if you think in terms of injuries and fighting, you know, for one thing, it's in the prevention of that. So I think that's at least that's how I took it. That's just how I took it.
Yeah.
Although it is a different thought in this sentence, inmate violence and health problems.
Oh, already. Where is the time going? We'll be right back. Such a fine sight to see. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, baby, don't say nay. I've got to know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other client business. This final segment, call her at 1-800-375-4188. Well, you know by now, this morning, the Biden administration revealed the first 10 drugs that Medicare will negotiate prices for, which will go into effect in 3 years, 2026. Under the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. Here are the drugs: Eliquis, the blood thinner, the diabetes drug Jardiance, another blood thinner, Xarelto, another diabetes treatment, Januvia, Farxiga, it's a treatment for kidney disease and diabetes, Entresto, that's a heart failure drug, Enbrel for autoimmune disease, Imbruvica, that's a cancer drug, Stelara, a treatment for Crohn's disease, and Fiasp and Novolog, their insulin drugs, again, for diabetes. White House statement on this read, despite Big Pharma spending nearly $400 million in lobbying efforts last year alone, the administration will continue to fight for lower costs and to make sure no American is denied essential care simply because of cost. Well, we will see. of those companies whose drugs made the initial cut, half have already filed suit against the government, including the Department of Health and Human Services and its Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and their leaders. Eliquis, manufactured by Pfizer and Bristol-Myers Squibb, and Imbruvica from J&J and AbbVie, were top picks for analysts and experts in the months leading up to the reveal, which came just before that September 1st deadline set by the Medicare group. Both companies expect to lose their patents in the coming years, but fall under the new rules allowing the drugs to be targeted between 9 and 13 years after the patent was first filed. This timeline has been a key point of contention for the drug companies. They argue that at least half the time under the patent expires, which is 20 years after filing, is spent in the research and development process. Still, companies have found ways to extend patent life for years after. Now, these drugs, which were selected from a list of 7,500, are covered under Part D and account for high Medicare spending in recent years. The selected drugs accounted for over $50 billion in total Part D prescription drug costs, or about 20% of total Part D covered drug costs between June 2022 and May of this year. Pundits are predicting a number of other drugs that could be included based on spending, including Ozempic, which surprisingly, in my mind, didn't make the initial list despite its average $730 a month cost, but still could in subsequent years. The diabetes drug, which is an injectable that some have started using for weight loss, has caused a spike in healthcare spending for many employers in recent months. Companies will begin a negotiating process early next year, and Center for Medicare will publish the final negotiated rates next September. More than a half dozen lawsuits have been filed already in various districts around the country, and what some analysts say is an attempt to fast-track the issue to the U.S. Supreme Court. More are expected after today. Now, these company lawsuits allege that the powers granted to Medicare by the Inflation Reduction Act to negotiate prices of the most expensive single-source drugs are unconstitutional. They cite the First Amendment, or freedom of speech, alleging that they're being forced into negotiating. Also the Fifth Amendment, or unlawful government seizure, alleging that Medicare is taking the drugs at the negotiated price, which seems weak. And the Eighth Amendment, or excessive fines, for the fines Medicare can levy for noncompliance. The Biden administration has said there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents Medicare from setting drug prices. Well, some analysts believe the lawsuits will be unsuccessful in delaying the negotiation process, which is slated to begin in February. I'm not so sure think it could be delayed as it slowly makes its way up the legal channels. Now, some said yesterday that biopharma manufacturing exposure is immaterial because the estimated profits that could be impacted are a small percentage of their global earnings. Now, nearly a year after the new law was first passed, a recent poll shows 83% of Americans support the idea of negotiating drug prices, but some of the same Americans could be negatively impacted by the move, according to the industry. Companies like AstraZeneca say it's affected how the company invests in, yes, research and development. And the lobbying group Pharma says the cost the government is trying to save will result in restricted access to drugs for seniors covered by Part D. Both entities are suing the government. John O'Brien, who's president and CEO of the National Pharmaceutical Council, says many important questions related to patient input, access, and negotiated formularies and therapeutic alternatives remain unanswered even as the process begins in earnest. There are also significant unintended consequences that are not yet well understood, such as how this process could create incentives delaying new drug launches. It's going to take time for this to all play out. In the meantime, stay tuned. financial survival will keep you in the loop. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. It features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin on the speculative cycle, as he calls it, and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's column on new virus vaccine methods. Of course, there's Wendy's weekly recap of the financial markets, plus I have a piece on interest rates. I admit I dozed off Sunday night to the classic Pink Floyd anthem, Another Brick in the Wall, with its famous refrain, "Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall." Well, as fall moves up on the horizon, hope still springs eternal. That is, I hope the Federal Reserve listens to these British rock icons. On the one hand, the message from central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming over the weekend was higher rates are here to stay, well, at least for a while. Fed Chair Jerome Powell kicked off the KC Fed's annual economic symposium on Friday morning, warning that the Fed is, quote, prepared to raise rates further if appropriate. His European Central Bank counterpart Christine Lagarde later promised to keep Eurozone borrowing costs as high as needed until inflation is back to its goal, like the Fed's 2%. Meanwhile, two-year Treasury yields, which are known to be the most sensitive to policy expectations, have hit their highest level in almost 2 months. As of yesterday morning, about 80% of Fed fund future traders believe the Fed will leave rates alone at their next policy meeting. That's on September 19th and 20th. It's according to the CME Group's Fed Watch tool. But 58% see rates going up another 25 basis points in November and then staying put until a minimum 25 basis cut in late January. Now, how's that for expectations? Well, surface evidence implies the Fed's tightening policy is working. Sean Williams recently observed, a deeper dive suggests the Fed is actually losing the battle against inflation. The Motley Fool writer notes that while headline CPIU paints a promising picture, 3.2% as of last month, core inflation, which excludes the volatile food and energy pieces, presents a problem. He says, although core inflation has declined from a peak of 6.6%, the reading of 4.7 in July is more than double the Fed's target of 2. He points out that while some parts of core inflation show signs of falling prices, like healthcare services and used vehicles, persistently higher core inflation is mainly due to rising shelter costs. That's rental. Shelter by far is the largest weighted spending category in the CPIU and core inflation. More importantly, William says, it's the single biggest reason the Fed is fighting a losing battle against inflation. With more than 9 in 10 homeowners holding a mortgage with a rate below 6% and almost 2/3 locked in below 4, where's the financial incentive to sell their home to buy a new one? With rates now over 7%. If you wonder why there's a major shortage of new listing for existing homes, look no further. Well, the same goes for millions of renters who'd love to buy a new home. As Williams notes, that inventory shortage is keeping home prices elevated while higher mortgage rates are pricing more and more prospective buyers out of home ownership. No wonder rent inflation is 7.7%. Higher than it's been in over 40 years. 40 years. Thus, Williams posits that the housing market is effectively frozen by a historic ramp up in mortgage rates. And landlords and rental communities, he added, have exceptional pricing power as a tailwind with no clear end in sight. But as a former colleague and friend of mine once told me, to get to the right answer, you have to ask the right question. Yes, as compelling as Williams' perspective is, perhaps the more direct question we ought to be asking is this. How much of a dampening effect has Fed tightening since March 2022 had on the economy? Or in other words, has the Fed given the economy enough time to catch up to its 11 interest rate hikes over the past 17 months? As Melody and I pointed out on Thursday's Financial Survival podcast, there's a ton of long-term fixed-rate mortgage debt out there that's limited the effect of higher rates so far. LendingTree estimates that Americans owe just shy of $12 trillion on over 83 million mortgages. That equates to an average of about $143,000. Mortgage holder, or about 71% of all consumer debt in the U.S. And late last week, Bloomberg's Bob Burgess posted a revealing chart showing that the effective rate of interest on all mortgage debt in the U.S. just a modest 3.6%. That translates to less than half of the current 30-year rate of 7.23%, according to the Fed. Indeed, the effective rate has barely ticked up at all since Pound Company fessed up about their huge miscalculation that inflation was transitory and reversed the course of monetary policy. It's not even back to where it was before the pandemic, despite the fact that average mortgage rates are at their highest level in 22 years. 7.24 in June 2001. Now, since the average 30-year mortgage bottomed out at 2.65 in January 2020, it's risen by less than 1 percentage point to the 3.6 average that Burgess found recently. In theory, there's a lot more room for this to rise. Eventually, mortgage debt gets rolled over or resets. Old mortgages get paid off and new ones take their place. Right now, the newer ones are substantially higher than those that'll be retiring. So look, as Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal and others say, if you want to argue that monetary policy works with lags, and it does, and that we haven't really felt the impact of the Fed's tightening yet, particularly the full effect, then you're asking the right question. In short, ladies and gentlemen, the Fed should leave rates alone for at least a few more months to give this lag effect adequate time to fully kick in. As I look ahead to winding down at bedtime tonight, gazing at, the last full moon of the summer of 2023, I can already hear David Gilmour and Roger Waters bricking the wall crescendo. Hey, J-Pal, leave those rates alone. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall. And that is today's last word because, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks as always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me.